House Filmworks presents Motown Mafia Podcast, dedicated to representing life in the struggle, and the struggle is relative. And now, your host, entrepreneur, Courtney Brown Jr.
We rolling?
Rolling
out. We in the house. What's happening, family? It is your man, CRB Jr., Courtney Robert Brown Jr., here at Big Boss Filmworks. We are happy and glad that with the support we've been receiving, to be honest, family, we are truly humbled by it. We are keeping this thing moving. Little insider Hollywood secret, we are in deep negotiations with some financiers about either doing the television series or the movie. We will keep you abreast, but we still got some other things for sure coming. We got some short stories coming up, some reenactments, really moving the channel forward. Got a couple big interviews that I will not divulge right now, that we really think you guys are going to enjoy about this life. You know, me being a middle-aged businessman at this point now, 40 years, got out the streets about 20 years ago. So, a whole lifetime of all the people that we've interacted with. And now that this whole street life thing has become a business, you know, you got BMF series on Stars and, of course, all of hip-hop is nothing but a reflection or inspired from the activities of people like my father and my friends and the things that they've done and some of my actions in the past. So all that said, fam, we happy, we proud of everybody kind of coming together. I say the one good thing about this project that we launched is that it's really gave an opportunity for a lot of family and friends to reconnect and get involved in this project. So, but what I want to do right now is chop it up a little bit. Hopefully you guys have been following Uncle Butch, Tommy Sharp, a.k.a. The Black Dispatch, a.k.a. Black Butch. He just dropped something where he was reminiscing about his interactions with Frank Matthews, Black Caesar, Frank Pee Wee Matthews out of New York, you know, the kingpin, big fella, hustler. And it followed up, you know, Dad, and earlier when my man Al Prophet did his Frank Matthews documentary, which if you haven't seen, check out Al Prophet's Frank Matthews documentary. It's a great piece of work. Because Pops and Butch and Eddie and all those guys had a fateful interaction with Frank Matthews in Vegas, where he was arrested on the case that he would eventually end up fleeing the country. So with all that said, are we hot? Sound like it. Okay. My man over there, and if you don't know, if you haven't checked out, check out Eddie Jackson Jr. over at Real True Street Crimes. So he had did some posts, and I guess I hear through the chatter sphere, through the comment sphere, everybody likes, I guess, with hustlers or great hustlers at that level or at that super hustler level where, you know, guys like Frank Matthews and Eddie Jackson and Nicky Barnes and Freddie Myers and Ike Atkins and guys like that live in that super stratosphere. I guess it's natural to be comparison. I mean, in hoop, you go to the barbershop, the conversation's going to eventually come up. Somebody going to say, LeBron Graham's the greatest player ever. And then you're going to have a bunch of older guys from a different generation, people maybe my age, who saw MJ play and be like, nah, you don't get it, guy. MJ was as good as they came. You know, you can, and we could pull all the stats in the world. The eternal Biggie Tupac. I'm a Biggie guy. I love Pac's music. But you ask me, there's no comparison. Biggie was a superior rapper. But, of course, I could find 20 people in a minute who would refute that and be like, are you crazy? Machiavelli was the guy, and Machiavelli was the guy. Jay-Z, Nas. Love Nas to death. You know, Escobar is that guy. But I'm a Hova guy, you know. His music resonated a little bit more with me. So those kind of debates are natural. And I think they're kind of even healthy. They're kind of funny. I don't put a lot of weight in it. The thing is, when you're comparing these street hustler legends, there's all kind of factors that you would have to play with. But I just, you know, both of those guys on that conversation of the fat man versus Black Caesar and who did what and who was the biggest. I mean, I think there's a couple things, and I grew up next to Eddie Jackson, so I'm exceptionally versed, and my father was his number two man for the majority of his major run. And you know, my pops also did time and formed a relationship and later would do business with a guy named Mickey Beckworth, who was Frank Matthews' number two guy. Another one of my father's main guy, John the Baptist, did time with this brother Liddy, I think, and maybe even Big Head's brother out of Baltimore. Some guys that also ran up some ridiculous numbers for themselves and for Frank Matthews. So you can go back and forth, but you know, there is a commonality, they say, how great minds think alike. So there's like a story of one of Frank Matthews' chief lieutenants, Brother Liddy. I can't think of his first name, but if you see the doc, Al's doc, you'll see him. Hell of a big fella. I think he just passed. But anyway, he tells a story about he owed Frank about $60,000, and Frank's running around, moving all around the country, and he finally gets him on the phone, and he's like, "Hey, man, come on, Frank, come get the money." And Frank like, yeah. And so this goes on for a minute. And finally, Frank asks him, Frank gets tired of the guy telling him, "Why don't you come pick up your $60,000? And Frank Matthews is like, "You know what, nigga, if you broke, man, just keep the money. You know, just keep the money." So how much money does a guy got who just gets irritated by you asking him to come get his money that he, and rather dealing with this conversation, he just tell you, "You know what, you're my friend, just keep it." Now, again, this is $60,000, this anecdote, in like 1972. And we try to bring you, there's a thing called inflation, guys, right? So, like, if you're old enough, you know that things 10 years ago cost a lot less than they cost now. And if you go back further in time, things were a lot cheaper. So, $1 million 30 years ago was a lot of money. $1 million now ain't that much money. So you're a guy in the streets now making $1 million in 2021. Yeah, he doing good, but that ain't saying much. You talk about a guy making $1 million in 1971 or 1972, that's a ton of money. That's like $10 million today's money. So anyway, and then it reminded me of a story my old man had told me about, Eddie. When Eddie approached him, he says, Eddie comes to him and he's like, "Yo, Berman, your man getting lonely." You know, Eddie had moved out to the exclusive suburbs of Southfield, Northland Gardens, where I eventually grew up, next door to him. And he tells my dad that he's lonely, being one of the few blacks out there. There's only like him, Smokey Robinson, for those old who don't, or too young to know who Smokey Robinson was. He was the Usher of his day, R&B icon, I guess, to bring it up, to give you guys a comparison if you don't know. So however big you think Usher is now, in his day, in their day, Smokey Robinson was the Usher of that period. So Frankie Smokey Robinson was out there. A lot of the Temptations, I guess, would be your Beth Biv DeVoe of this generation. Mm-hmm. You know, they made hits after hits. So he tells my dad that your man needs some company. You need to move out here. And matter of fact, it's a house next door to me that's for sale. You should buy it. My old man tells him some silliness like, "Hey, I work for you, Eddie. How can I afford to live next door to you?" And Eddie kind of laughs at him and tells him, he's like, "Well, damn, Berman, you the one collecting the money. When you collect the next $100,000, just go buy the house." So again, how much money's Eddie got if in a whim he just tells his man, "Look, I think you should live next door to me, and it ain't not, it's $100,000 1971 money." Like $1 million today, by anybody's math, things are 10 times. Back in that day, a Rolls Royce cost you, $20,000. What's a new Rolls Royce cost you now? $200,000, $250,000, right? So everything's about 10 to 1. So again, how much money's Frank Matthews got if he can tell his buddy, "Man, just stop bugging me about that $60,000. In fact, you seem like you broke. Just keep the money." How much money's he got? How much money's Eddie Jackson got if he can just tell his man, "Look, man, just the next, when you do next collections you do, I'm not going to miss it. I won't miss it. Just the next $100,000 you pick up, just go buy the house," right? Another story that's in the Frank Matthews documentary is similar. So I guess Frank was shooting some moves. I believe it was one of his Baltimore people also. He'd given the guy $1 million. Frank go off. The guy doesn't see Frank Matthews for like 6 months. He finally catches up to him. He's like, Frank, when are you going to come pick up the money? Frank Matthews asks him, what money are you talking about? He said, Frank, remember you dropped off all those brown paper bags full of money to me? You told me to hold it for you. Frank said, I did. He said, okay, well, I'll catch up to you in a couple weeks. Oh, how much money you got if you can forget you gave somebody $1 million? And again, this is $1 million in 71, 72 monies. How much money Frank Matthews got if he can give a guy $1 million and he don't even remember that he had it? According to the government estimates that when Frank went on the run, he took $15 million cash with him. Mm. When they raided one of his spots, it was 10,000 of what they call glassine envelopes that you put your packs in, that you make up bundles.
Yeah.
So if you run the math, it was 10,000 of the packs. It was like $30 million they was ready to put into the streets. So that $15 million count that the government says he ran off with, and again, that's $15 million 1973 dollars. That's basically a $150 million bag in today's money, right? So follow back up, same kind of situation. Eddie gets popped, loses 10 kilos in the December 15th raid, 1971. Right after he starts dealing with the Gambinos, he gets popped. He loses 10 keys of China White. 10 keys, they were going to put a 10 on it. So that 10 keys was going to turn into 100 keys, right? Okay, run a math. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not, and they're gonna sell those wholesale. That ain't counting what they're gonna break down, right? In February, he loses the 10 keys, gets arrested. The indictment then follows 32 people whose legal fees he pays from that moment until the case is finally all legal remedies are exhausted in 77. Right? So he's already get told, Pops, take $100,000 the next time you collect. This is before the pop, before the indictment. So now they get indicted. He's lost 10 keys, you know, what would have been 100 keys that he would have distributed. Let's just say at $25,000 a key, right? That's $2.5 million. Not to mention what they would have broke down. The key, too, that they would have took to the streets themselves, that they would have probably turned into 5-6 million. Anyway, even after all of this financial trauma that he's gone through in 71, he's feeling bad for Pops because all this is going on, and he's got his man living next door to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Eddie had this guy, this interior decorator named Harrison Taylor, who was like the most renowned interior designer of his day, do his house. So he tells Pops, you know, man, it ain't right. You know, I ain't planning all this happening. But soon as I shoot this movie too, you need to get your house laid out with Harrison Taylor. The old man, like, yeah, but shoot, that's gonna run another $100,000. Eddie say, all right, just give me a week. Let me straighten something out. He go back up. He talk to his people on the coast. They bring back in the bag. Again, he tells Pops the same thing that he told him to buy the house. First $100,000 to come in, you go on and, you know, lay out your house, you know. And I grew up in a house with Steinway baby grand pianos, eating off of Tiffany and Cartier china. That was kind of how the environment and lifestyle we were living. So again, how much money is he handling? How much money is he handling? Who's to say, man? Who's to say? I mean, me personally, again, if you just want to do, if push to the wall, the Jay-Z, Nas, Biggie, Tupac, Jordan, LeBron comparison. From what I've researched, you know, Frank Black Caesar Matthews started off getting his grind on in 69. He basically had until 73. What he did in those 5 years has probably never been matched. And let me just give a guess, and then this is why. Okay. Frank had met some, I believe, Puerto Ricans and Cubans who eventually end up catching in New York. They end up catching cases. They had to go down to South America, to Venezuela. While in Venezuela, they connect with the remnants of the French connection. So, now to help you guys out, Eddie, in 71, at the Ali Frazier fight on that trip, that's when he meets the Gambino crime family, who are also distributors of that said French Connection, China White. So both are working the same bag, for those who, if your eyes haven't connected the dots on that. The mob is dealing with that French Connection bag. Frank Matthews, but he's not dealing with the mob to get his end of the French. He's dealing not directly with the French Connection, but through his Venezuelan and Cuban friends who are now based down in South America, which is where members of, or parts of the member of that French Connection cartel were based out of. Now, so I would think, since they were doing their own importing, that his ticket would have been better. And because of the nature of, if you're getting the thing imposed to a controlled organization like the mob, if you're kind of just got open access through your connection to them, you can make bigger orders, right? You probably make bigger orders and probably, but nobody knows, but he probably was able to make bigger orders and get a better ticket. And I mean, from the number count, you know, what Frank did in those 5 years, I do not think has ever been matched. Now, that said, Eddie Jackson's run goes from 69 to 77. He meets up with a guy, John Claxton, who was getting supplied by a guy named, a Jewish guy named Sam Nauber, remnants of the old Purple Gang. So when he comes into the game, he's eating at the top of the food chain, as my dear subscriber out there says.
Mr. Flint.
Big shout out to Mr. Flint. When EJ come in the game, dealing with Claxton's dealing with Sam Nauber. Sam Nauber is still remnants, yeah, of the legendary Purple Gang, Meyer Lansky, the old Jewish mafia, right? They getting it. He's getting as good as his get coming into the game. Then he goes from Claxton, who's supplied by Sam Nauber, remnants of the Purple Gang, to directly dealing with the Gambinos, who are, of course, importing, one of the exclusive importers of that said French Connection, that famous China White that was 99.9% pure. So he goes, he's either getting his whole run, if that 70s run, is either he's dealing with a Purple Gang plug via Claxton, where he's dealing with the French Connection plug via the Gambinos. His thing goes all the way until 1977. He turns himself in on a violation, messing around with Uncle Butch in 76. But the crew is still on the streets. So the Eddie Jackson's organization did not shut down officially till my father and the other 30-some-odd co-defendants have to turn themselves in. Into April, that's April 1977. April 1st, to be exact, 1977. The remnants of the Eddie Jackson organization all turned themselves in. So that's from 69 to 77. In this street thing, guys, you don't hear about 8-year runs. Not at that level. And yes, also during that time, he is footing his own legal expenses and that of his other 31 co-defendants. And while this is going on, I can assure you, not what I think, because I lived it, we were living at a lifestyle that only the 1% of Americans get to live at. The tutors, the private lessons, the trips to the Caribbean every other week, all that plus some, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's it. I think, you know, this, it's a fascinating conversation. Again, I don't know if it's of any particular value. But I do love the debate. Maybe we're going to even do a whole series just to keep some gasoline on it. Rank the top 10 hustlers, or if there's any hustlers that, you know, and again, what I'm going to get into is my man Ike Atkins, you know, who really the Frank Lucas character was kind of stolen from Ike Atkins. Old man ended up doing time with him down in Atlanta and then later at Butner. You know, so there's been so many hell of a superhero guys in this street thing, but it's fun. I love the chatter. I love the enthusiasm about it. It's all about it. It's all good. It's Nas or Jay-Z. It's your choice. And these guys were not writing down everything they did. It's
very difficult to get an accurate count, but there is no doubt Frank Matthews, a whale of a whale, big fella's big fella. You know, again, just a hustler. And I'm going to close on this note because this gets lost. For anybody who's ever ran a business, it's difficult running a $50,000 or $100,000 a year business for a year or two. These black men were running multi-million dollar businesses, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues being created, untold amount of people on their payroll. Now, although that it was an illegal enterprise, that does not take away from the fact that it was an enterprise, nonetheless. You cannot do that. I mean, everybody, a lot of guys that hit a lick for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 2 months in the streets. That's why there's this whole special, that's why there is a RICO charge for a continual ongoing criminal enterprise. And there are statutes like 848 and 849 for kingpins who are involved in continual criminal enterprises, because the authorities understand that someone who can keep a criminal enterprise going for an extended period of time is a different level of criminal, right? And so therefore the punishments are much greater for people who can put together and organize ongoing criminal activity. So these are high IQ guys that are pulling this stuff off. So we should not lose sight of that. One day we'll all ask the question that few do, you know, why was what they were doing illegal anyway in a world where their alcohol counterparts were causing more people to die of drunk driving and cirrhosis of the liver and just dysfunctional households. That was true then. More people die of alcohol-related deaths than heroin and cocaine combined.
Tobacco.
Low, God forbid, tobacco, you know, the tobacco company. Well, I mean, they put it on their bag. This shit will kill you. Please enjoy. Please enjoy. But I do assure you, this shit will kill you. And we've, you know, they denied it for about 20 years. So that's all, family. I hope you guys, you know, I had to chime in on this Fat Man Black Caesar thing. It is all good and gravy in my book. I appreciate the support. We're going to get some more anecdotes about that. And I'm actually going to go back and, you know, I've seen and read, you know, whether it was Scott Bernstein or Al Proffitt or Ron Chespin, some guys who really spent a lot of time researching Frank Matthews. But I'm going to read that book. There's been a couple books around them. I think there's one called Black Caesar and there's another one called Easy Money. And I'm going to take the time, maybe next time I go on a vacation, to read them and then come back and give a review, because this guy, Frank Matthews, is another one. I don't know, unfortunately, he doesn't have family members or friends. A lot of his crew, I know, are really, you know, older, really, really older, like Pop's age, in their 80s and stuff. But this is a guy whose story needs to be. He needs a microphone and organ and someone to pick up. Because if people are going to be talking about the Eddie Jacksons and the Big Meeches and the Freeway Rickies, you know, this guy's name, Frank Matthews, needs to be coming up in any of those conversations. So, and again, you know, as a member of the Team Fat Man camp, I mean, that man's resume in the streets again speaks for itself. So that's it. Hopefully it was good talking about that. Again, thanks everybody. Oh, guys, please hit and continue to hit that like, share, and subscribe button. It helps out the algorithms. We are growing quickly. We want to continue to grow. Again, we want to do some things. We're going to start bringing some shorts and some reenactments, knee deep in some conversations with those people who have the really, really deep pockets, about really taking this project and the story to the next level. So appreciate you guys. Much love. It's your man, CRB Jr., signing out. Big Boss Filmworks in the house. It is going down in 2021. Be good and be well. Be blessed, man.
Thanks for checking out Big Boss Filmworks Motown Mafia Podcast. Hit us up at Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, Big Boss Filmwork. Interested in advertising, sponsorship, booking? Email BigBossFilmwork@yahoo.com.